Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, my friends, we are halfway home on a Thursday. Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan, fresh off of the third annual-ish Ben and Woods Open. Great day was had by all. We are a little bit sun-cooked, certainly. I wore sunscreen, but, I mean, it still just zaps you when you're out there. We were out there about 12, 13 hours yesterday, hanging out with the Tier 1s. It was really a special day. It always is. I love seeing you guys. Met so many new Tier 1s as well that probably aren't super active in the chat or on Twitter and stuff. And it's always nice to hear that people appreciate what you do. So thank you guys for showing up, coming out, helping us raise money for charity.
I met a couple of people, older guys that were like, I've listened to you guys every morning since day one.
It's crazy.
The old station. He goes, I never call in.
Yeah,
not on social media, but I just wanted to meet you guys finally.
I appreciate
first
those guys.
Time out at the golf tournament.
Yeah, those guys aren't a pain in my ass at all. They're not calling me names and stuff. I like you guys.
I had a few people who said it's fun. It's fun to finally match the voice to the face.
Yeah.
As if I haven't been on TV for the last 20 years here in San Diego.
Maybe they don't get ABC.
Apparently not. I mean, antenna on the side of your house ever once, and it had Who Wants to Be a Millionaire on, and all of a sudden I came on just accidentally. You didn't see me once in the last 20 years.
Oh, my God.
Fine, whatever. You got a lot. You're much taller in person than you are on the radio.
Okay, yeah, well, listen. I mean, you know, you can't do Ben's Glory Hole on ABC Channel 10 at night. You don't get to take the creative risks that you get to take here on the Ben and Woods radio program. I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Reindel, the executive producer. Paul, you did a great job yesterday. Knocked it out of the park. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor, joins us as well. And so it was a little bit different this year. This was more of the Ben and Woods do-it-yourself version. And it was quite an undertaking to plan, host, and execute a golf tournament.
If anyone wants to know, what was Ben's glory hole? Because you're probably thinking some inappropriate
things. There was. Glory hole.
It was an opportunity for a $20 donation to our charitable works, the North County Junior Golf Association and the Goat Hill Caddy and Leadership Academy. You had a chance to beat my shot. I hit a shot in the morning, and it was about 35 feet away. And if you got inside of my shot, you won a dozen Chrome Tour golf balls from Callaway. Just about everybody participated all day. A lot of them had cash, but we also did Venmo if you wanted to come. And most people had no problem with it, but there was one competitor, and I don't remember who it is, so you are anonymously safe at this moment. But he sent me what he thought was a $20 Venmo for Ben's Glory Hole, and he accidentally sent me a $20 gift certificate to Sephora. Not sure how that's going to help the Junior Golf Association, but now we have a $20 gift certificate, Wood. So
I didn't know you could do that.
I'm on the website. You can get for $20, we can get a luminizer. Do you need any luminizer?
I think I have plenty.
Bronzer and contour stick.
Okay, could use that.
On sale, I can get you like 5 eyeliner pencils.
No, I don't wear eyeliner anymore.
I just pulled up Venmo. So, like, right now, you pull up the person's name. So I pulled up like Ben, you know, $10. And then you're supposed to put something, a note.
Right.
And you can say either request or pay. But right above that, it says gift. So he must have hit gift. And you can send them a DoorDash gift card, Starbucks, Sephora, Chipotle, right, Lululemon, Adidas.
So Caitlin in the chat says she'll take it.
She'll take the Sephora
gift
card.
Let's just send it to her.
Right. Yeah. Caitlin, give us your information.
What do we need? Her phone number? Or your Venmo?
Venmo Caitlin, account number. Yep.
DM me your Venmo, and we will send you our $20. Just so you guys don't think that we're going to take that $20 ourselves.
I could get the mini radiant creamy concealer, which would be good for television, perhaps, for me. I do have a blemish that I might want to hide. Today on Channel 10.
Right,
so maybe I should go to Sephora during our break between the show and the CEO meeting.
No, because we're giving it to Caitlin
use
now.
Use it for myself.
No. Okay, stop being so selfish.
Fine.
This is for charity. And not that Caitlin's a charity, but she did just graduate. Fine. You know, the little graduation gift from the Ben and Woods program. What is this blemish that you have?
It's a big old zit on the bridge of my nose.
I don't see it, though.
It's gotten a little better today. Yeah,
now it's right where your glasses go.
Yeah, it hits right when the glasses.
Does it hurt?
Oh, yeah. It's a little uncomfortable right there.
The glasses just press right up against it.
So gnarly.
Right there. Right there.
Well, listen.
Ouch.
The DIY version of the Ben & Woods Open was tough. It was a hard day. And I
think we crushed it.
I think we did, too.
So
but I didn't realize I got there at like 6. And I started like unloading things from my car, and I'm like, we must have stuffed 170 bags,
gift bags, like 8 different items in them.
That was the biggest nightmare. I have certain items. Adam has certain items. Paul has certain items. Ben has certain items.
Did that bag get a chapstick?
Yeah, I'm looking.
Wait, this one doesn't have the golf balls.
It was an S show. I was like, there's got to be a better way to do this, and that's what we're trying to learn is what went right, what went wrong.
We need to line up all 160 bags on the course, like at the tee boxes, all the way down, and just assembly line.
I mean, it was, and I didn't really realize. And then I'm like unloading cases of beer, unloading cases of water, unloading all kinds of stuff.
You brought in what, a dozen boxes of donuts. Yep.
Yeah, I got high off my own supply yesterday for sure. It was a great day, and we didn't really want to because we had to run the tournament.
There was no chance.
We gave away some great gifts, raffle prizes. You guys were awesome.
We had one tier one who actually won 2 of the raffle items, and there were like hundreds of raffle tickets in these things.
Does he know yet?
I haven't told him yet.
All right, Hector, we actually play baseball with Hector. He's on our team. This was not rigged, I swear. I like Hector, but not enough to rig my golf tournament for him. I like him a lot. He's a great player. But he actually won 2 raffle prizes yesterday.
We were going to rig it. I mean, like, Shelley bought a bunch of tickets.
Yeah.
We could have rigged it more in our favor than that.
Yeah, 100%. The winner of the Odyssey Suite, Hannah Nancarrow Woods. Wow, what are the odds? I mean, and they bought tickets,
they did,
too.
The
spring
training autographed baseball that Paul Reindel
wins that.
Wow.
No, it was a...
One ticket. What are the odds?
It was an awesome, awesome day. Everyone behaved themselves for the most part. The heckle hole was great. The glory hole was great. We did a little different. Now, we didn't have all of the frills, you know, that other golf tournaments have, like when you're out on the course. You know, like... food and drink. We didn't have those. We wanted it to be a little bit more of an experience,
golfing experience. Good food and drink. It was all stationed at the clubhouse.
Yeah, when you're out playing golf, the last thing you need is a drink or some food.
Well, plus, you and I loaded up a couple of carts, and we drove around every hole. We were throwing Jersey Mike sandwiches
at people.
Shots, beers, the whole
I did
yards.
Think about it, though, because I have played tournaments before where I'm out there, and every hole you go to, it's, hi, how are you? Come spin this wheel. It's 20. And I'm like, I just dropped this for a ticket. I cannot come out to this tournament and drop $3,000 spinning a wheel.
They make you feel bad, though.
Do you
want to help the homeless veterans or not?
My name's Paul. Mission Fed Credit Union. Do you like sick children?
Yeah.
Do you care about sick children?
Oh, you don't? Okay.
No, okay.
Okay. Cool,
if you do, it'll cost $150 to spin the wheel.
We played a tournament a couple years ago. Ben and I did. And I left that thing like $700 lighter than when I came. And I was like, you know what? It was fun. It wasn't that fun. Okay? I was broke when I left. And I like to give. I'm a giver. But holy smokes, man. It was partly because we did it ourselves. And the other part was I also don't like to be bothered when I'm at every hole of a scramble. Not bothered, but like I just want to play. The pace was outstanding. You get through a scramble in 4 hours, you're doing something.
Four-hour rounds, two of them,
back
to back.
That's amazing.
Incredible.
That's amazing.
And we had time to turn around all the carts for the second half of the event. That was pretty cool.
The craziest part of the whole day.
That really was.
The morning flight took off at 8.
Yep.
The afternoon guys were taken off about 1 o'clock. So between 11:30 and 1 p.m., the morning crew is all starting to come in.
Yeah, that was gnarly.
The afternoon guys are showing up early to register. And hey, where's my damn cart?
Yep.
Where's my cart? I'm like, bro, it's on number 14.
They're still on the course.
Just hang out. Just relax.
Yep. Yeah, it was nuts, man. It was nuts. And then everyone was watching the Padres game, too. And it was just a fun day. I got home, though, yesterday. Put the kids to bed, and I went in and I laid down and I was like, I am so cooked. I am so cooked. But it's been so fun watching the growth and of the tournament and people already. Hey, when's the next one? I'm like, you son of a bitch. Do not ask me today. Ask me today.
There's a reason why we call it the annual ish.
We need a little breather.
Bennett Woods Open. We don't like to be locked in and know, oh no, it's annual. That means we have to do it like around the same time every year. We don't.
We don't.
It's ish.
We had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. Always good to hang with you guys. So
I will say it's safe though. We'll do it in 2025. Maybe before June. Maybe after June.
I would settle down on that. I would wait. I don't know. I'm not committing to anything long term. Other than I'll be here today for the round table, and then after that, you know, we'll see. We do have our CEO coming to town.
Yeah.
We have our CEO coming to town today at 1:45.
If you're listening, David, big fan
Huge
of the
fan.
CEO of our company.
Thank you so much.
My Odyssey.
Simply
the best. I did mention in the 6 a.m. hour that it is a big meeting. Everyone's expected to be there. Don't ask any questions, please. No, no, you're just to get noticed. Don't ask any questions.
Your questions are not CEO-level questions.
They're not.
I can promise you that.
Whatever you're thinking.
No one here needs to know what, you know, fourth quarter projections are due to election year advertising revenue.
Right.
No one needs to know that in this meeting.
I don't even know that the shows need to be there, but we have to be there. We will be there.
We're low-level employees.
We are such low. That's the funny thing is, we are the low-level employees here. We don't generate any money.
If Annie and Alston offered you do a 4-hour midday show after, or a 3-hour midday show after the roundtable, so
you
don't have
to
go to the meeting, would you do that?
Today?
Yeah.
No, I'd rather go to the meeting. Okay. I'm out of material. It's 8:12. I got nothing.
Because they'll be on the air. They got lucky.
Oh, they don't have to go.
Well, they moved the back to 1:45, so they have to come right off the air and join mid-meeting for like the last 45 minutes.
Oh, okay.
It's really Gwynn and Chris who will only have to pop in for like 10 minutes.
Even then, they're popping. They're like, hey, we got to get on the air.
And then they get to be on the air, so they don't have to be at the meeting.
Mm. Mm. Man. All right. Well, just don't ask any questions, please. You know, I go right from that. I got a soccer clinic I got to go to after that for Taylor.
Never mind.
Excuse me. No, we did not have giant Ziplocs, JR wants to know. We actually had bags.
I think giant Ziplocs would have been fantastic. Then we could have seen in the bags when we were stuffing them to know whether we had already put something in the bag or not and didn't have to like root around in there to decide if it was already a ball.
You have to zip up 170 bags. You have to push the air out and zip up 170 bags.
It's not like you're keeping it fresh.
Yeah, but you're not.
These aren't Ritz crackers that we're putting in there. You can have a little air in the bag if it's just golf balls and stickers. They're not going to degrade in there. You just close it, zip. It lines up perfectly.
Take up a lot of space.
Remember the yellow and blue make green to make sure that they were closed? You could tell.
Of course I remember that.
That was genius.
Terrible bit. it was a great day. Thank you guys for being there. Thanks to all of our sponsors, people that came out and donated their time and their products and things like that. It was great. It was a great, great day. Love you guys.
Let's take a time out. When we come back, we can take a little throwback Thursday tour down memory lane, and then Eno Saris is going to join us at the bottom of the hour for our smart baseball segment.
We got some good ones
all coming up after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone,
and me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback, on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I feel like that kid who didn't do his homework the night before and is trying to finish it.
So me.
Last second in the morning before the teacher requests it.
Yeah, it took my whole life.
With the golf tournament yesterday, and then I'm exhausted at the end. My stock of round table topics is a little barren at the moment. So I'm kind of in the commercial breaks filling out some potential questions to ask y'all coming up at 10 o'clock this morning.
Lean on me. When you're not strong, I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on.
Would it have been the worst thing if you just sent a group text to everybody on the round table?
Yeah, seriously.
And just said, hey, what are you guys kind of feeling? What do you want to talk about?
You don't get
it's okay if they're prepared and know what topic might come up.
You don't get paid any extra for being the host. I just go in and answer your question when you come to me, but you have to host it.
I'm not a big believer in crowdsourcing my material.
Yeah, I'm really not either, to be honest, but sometimes you absolutely have to. You have to.
And call me, maybe arrogant, but I feel like the topics I come up with are the best topics.
I was on your side, and now I am no longer on your side. Paulie, is he serious?
People love the round table. Yeah, I feel like the reason they love the round table is, me.
Oh my God.
You egotistical, arrogant MF.
And it's like, I get the bad rap on this show. And I work with
it's just being logical. I have to direct the whole kit and caboodle, the whole shebang. Go totally off the rails without me there.
You're like the Marty Scorsese of the round table. I don't know that the round people like the round table. All right, I'm not going to say they don't like it because of you, but that's a bit be mean. But I'm also,
I set you all up for success is why my job is.
Lisa says, I'd like to thank me. Yes. Yeah, you TSO.
Tommy Pham. I'm proud of myself.
Proud of myself.
Proud of myself.
All business. I like
the success of the round table.
That is unbelievable. Matt says, I'm drowning at work, but I had to pop in to LMAO. This guy, I was on his side. I was like, bro, I got your back. And now he's like, I can't leave it to you. You're an idiot.
Didn't use those exact words. Said I don't like to crowdsource my topics.
This is so good. You're so good.
You've taught me that it's always better to have some
improv of myself
radio.
Oh, yeah.
So if everyone knew all the topics beforehand, I feel like it might get a little stuffy during the round table.
Oh, for sure. So. I agree with that. But, listen, this is an outlier, as Mike Schilt likes
to say.
That
is true. This is an outlier day for the Ben and Woods show.
Yeah, no doubt. So I think, if anybody has any ideas, if you're listening right now, please come to the table with them. The round table, as it were.
Throwback Thursday is often about some of the outliers that we've had over the years.
Sure.
And Paulie's got a couple of moments that we can revisit from past Ben and Woods years around this time.
Yeah, let's start one of our older clips here. This would have been 2020. June 18th, 2020. You guys were in the Corona Cave. With about 2 or 3 months in at this point, probably 2 months in, and we weren't on YouTube yet. We weren't on camera, so people don't know. They can't see what's going on in the background. And boy, were you guys easily distracted.
We had a moment.
Corona.
Well,
cave.
The Corona Cave is located in a rustic area of town. So
out in the country, yes, as it were.
Let's say just a one-year deal.
Yep.
One-year deal with the Chargers. Justin Herbert two Coyotes. Right there.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Outside the Corona Cave.
Well, guys.
Careful. Inside the gates.
They're so cute, too.
Yeah, I'm going to tell my dad he does not like that.
Sweet little angels.
He'll probably hear, actually, on the show. I won't even need to text.
Will I hear a shotgun soon?
No.
Sorry,
a loud banging noise. They're heading around toward the backyard, Mom.
Yeah, they're listening. Sorry, we got distracted. Look, a squirrel.
Yeah.
What was I saying about Colin Kaepernick?
That was, we were still like a month out from baseball returning.
Well, at that point, we're wondering in the pandemic, are the wild animals just going to take over now?
Correct.
We're all locked away.
Yeah.
The world is now reverting to its primordial state out
Correct.
There.
Correct. Yeah, it was like Mad Max Thunderdome for a while there. Couldn't find a chicken breast anywhere in the grocery store. Not one. Not one piece of chicken was able to be found. The toilet paper hoarding. What a time. What a time to be alive it was.
And then our next clip comes from 1 year ago tomorrow. So we have our YouTube channel, and on our YouTube channel we have memberships. You don't have to do it, but if you want to support the show, you can do that in $5 a month increments or $10 a month increments. The $10 will get you access to a monthly member stream. We will go live on YouTube for hour, hour and a half, once a month, chat with everybody, and that is for your $10 donations. And we had an issue this time last year on the member stream where Woodsy, shocker, could not get his AirPods to connect to his computer. So we're sitting there talking. We can hear him. Everybody can hear Woods, and he has no idea. He doesn't even know if his mic's on or not. Ben is trying to jam some ridiculous Charger stories down everyone's throat that nobody really asked for.
He really
I had a
audio colleague. AirPods.
She runs the teleprompter on Mondays. And she said something. She's not a sports fan really at all.
Just slamming the keyboard.
I watch your highlights of the Padres and just feels so much like the Chargers. And you know how they
now won? I have it on. Now I have these things off and it's still not working.
You're supposed to win. Can you mute him?
I'm telling you, it's not my fault. It's these damn kids. They're probably in here messing with something.
He has no idea he's interrupting your story.
Ben's just going to fullback it.
Just my call stuff.
Anyway, I thought you had a good point.
Oh, my God.
This Padres team does feel like at least five or six of those Chargers teams that, like, baffled you how they could lose games. Like, what's going
Don't
on?
Don't you mute my mic? The volume's up.
Look, he
mute's off, like... I got nothing. I'm telling you. Bro, get your ass to bed. I can't get it in my computer or anything. Nothing.
I'm not doing a 2-hour monologue.
I'm serious. Like, I can't even get the speaker live.
It sounded like you were.
I to do that.
All right.
Oh, man. Beef wants me to continue my story. What was just the story about the chart? It was the fact that she's not even a sports fan. And she kind of made a point that I thought was actually pretty valid. But yeah, it does feel, these feel like losses the Chargers would have had. You got to invent creative ways to lose. You're not bad.
Can you hear us now?
Yes.
Like, you're not bad enough to just lose and get beat. Still going. You have to come up with creative, weird ways to lose. And that's what this season feels like.
Ben was starting to tell that story, and Woods was just going ballistic.
Did I interrupt you with Chargers stories?
Yeah, a little bit.
It's funny. Andros makes the point. I was going to make the exact same point. It's crazy how we're still saying the same thing about the Padres today, a year to the day later. Finding new ways to lose. It's nothing's really changed. The more things change, the more they stay the same, as we know. Time is in
now
fact.
It's infecting the San Diego Wave, who are finding weird ways to lose. Like last night, tied 1-1 late in the game. They gave up this unbelievable goal last night.
Like, unbelievably great?
Great, yeah. Okay. From a player who's like a defender who came in late in the game, who's not even an offensive player. She reached around the Wave player with her right foot to get the ball out of the air, kicked it to her left foot, and then slammed it past the goalkeeper. It's like one of the best goals you'll ever see. And, of course, the Wave are on the wrong end of it, and they still haven't won a road game all year long.
Oh, man.
The San Diego sports thing is strong right now.
It's really bubbling up right now. Should we do an energy cleanser? Because that worked so well last year when we had the guy come in. The energy healer.
That was around this time last year, wasn't it?
We got
it felt like maybe July when we had the energy healer in.
Was that last year?
We've
done it every year, I think, but last year we had that guy and he had oh man, we got killed. It made me reluctant to even do.
Like, I see in 3 weeks things turning around.
Oh my God.
But they didn't really turn around in 3 weeks.
We got crushed for that. It made me like reluctant to even like do bits or jokes anymore. It really
People thought that was worse than That's What's In, guys.
I know. They were so mad at us. I'm like, bro, we're trying to help.
That's What's In.
Bryce is gonna lose. Manny's gonna cruise. That's What's In.
Man, he's not cruising.
He's definitely not cruising.
Bryce is not losing either. Nope. Well, he did lose yesterday hitting two home runs, but they did lose the game to the Padres yesterday.
Indeed they did.
All right, Eno Saris joins us every Thursday from The Athletic. He is one of the smartest baseball reporters, analysts out there, and we are lucky enough to have them each week join us for our Smart Baseball segment. That is coming up next with Bennett Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. And then later, the blizzard of 77. I remember it well, Woods. Growing up here in San Diego.
I've never known what that refers to, but I love the song.
Assume there was a very cold spell back in 77.
Somewhere.
Blizzard. Somewhere. I'm sure there was. Saris usually joins us from his locale up in NoCal. He's standing by. We'll get to our Smart Baseball segment right after a check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
It's time for the super polished, yet to be named Smart Baseball Weekly segment with Eno Harris. Saris, son of a bitch. Brought to you by 7 Mile Casino, just 7 minutes from the ballpark by the bay in Chula Vista. Here's Eno Saris with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
One of these days, our voice guy is going to get that right the first time.
Yeah, but, exactly.
Not yet, as we welcome Eno
screwing up.
Eno Saris from The Athletic to the program. Eno, hope you're having a good week. Good morning.
Ah, yes. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. Yeah, absolutely.
It is good to have you. I saw your tweets about Willie Mays. I know you're a Bay Area guy. Just give it to us right now, man. Your thoughts on the passing of Willie Mays.
I think he was the best player of all time.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a bias, to the Bay Area. I didn't actually see him play physically, but when you just look at something like Fangraphs WAR, he's third, and he's behind a guy in Babe Ruth that, no fault of his own, didn't play the entire player pool.
Yep.
Pre-integration baseball, and then he's the other guy he's behind is Barry Bonds, who has obvious flaws with just looking at the numbers without context, and then just in terms of how he played on the field, he has two or three of the most iconic plays in the history of baseball. The catch, he has a play that we call the catch.
And
everybody knows what it was. Just a complete all around player, super exciting, and had his own sort of interesting way of combating racism and dealing with all that while just playing, crazy ass baseball. And if you look and you say, oh, well, why didn't he win more MVPs? I don't know why he didn't win more MVPs. They didn't know about WAR back then, but he led the National League in WAR 10 times. it was a little bit like Mike Trout, where he didn't win the award every year because people maybe got tired of him or something. But he could have. He should have won more MVPs.
One of the great things about baseball is we can go back and compare the numbers from different eras, and you can even apply modern stats, at least most of them, to older ballplayers like WAR. Now, how do you compare eras, though? Because you just pointed out there are certain discrepancies between the talent pool, obviously technology that has gotten better, pitchers who throw harder nowadays. How do you kind of philosophically approach comparing players of different eras?
It's super hard. It's impossible. I mean, I have to do this once a year when I, you do my Hall of Fame vote. And there's so much context that can pop into your head. And you just kind of have to sort through and decide what you feel is important. I mean, it can be super complicated, stuff like, how much does off-field stuff matter? Am I going to count this? Am I going to count that? And then on top of that, you have also these things like we're probably not going to have another 300-game winner as a starting pitcher going forward.
Right.
And we may never, but just because of the way that starting pitchers are used, how many innings they throw. And so if you have these hard and fast 500 home runs, 300 wins, that's how you get in the Hall of Fame. Then you lose a lot of players and you may never elect another starting pitcher to the Hall of Fame, which seems wrong. So you kind of have to look at trends in each of these, times. You have to think your way back to those times. I think I've said this on this show before, no number is just a number without context. I mean, there's there's so much more to it that, you know, even as a numbers guy, I try not to end arguments with numbers. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, the way I look at it, in a sport like football, if you took like offensive linemen from the 1960s and put them out there today, they'd look like a JV team. Even Hall of Famers wouldn't.
They'd just get trucked.
Just wouldn't even be able to compete. Now, does that make today's player better? Then I think you have to kind of ignore some of the effects of, you know, the modern technology and training techniques when you're comparing, because otherwise, yeah, I'm sure there's way faster swing speeds now, way faster. Obviously, we know velocity is higher and higher and higher. That doesn't necessarily make you a better ball player. You just were born conveniently later than some other guys.
Well, that's an interesting question. One thing, in the Hall of Fame specifically, we are putting fewer people on the Hall of Fame now than we did before. Which seems weird. That seems like maybe an overcorrection. But we just had a player poll on The Athletic, and one of the things that modern players are most annoyed about is ex-players saying that they were better, or that these guys that are, you know, their batting average is down, the strikeouts are up, it's their fault. It's not that the pitching is good now, it's just that the hitters are bad. You know, that was like one of the major complaints of modern players, thinking that no, we're better now, and in fact, I have a piece coming out where I was asking people, you know, I'm a piece coming out tomorrow with Jason Stark about the run environment, and we were asking people, and hitters today think that pitching has never been better.
It's hard to disagree with that when you watch, you know, 22 inches of run on a two seamer from Michael King or Matt Waldron's knuckleball or whatever, you know, Robert Suarez's fastball. I mean, it's hard to.
It's like you used to have knuckleballers.
Sure.
We have a knuckleballer who has five other pitches.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah. You knew you were just going to go up there and swing at three knuckleballs, maybe, and maybe one would hang and you would hit it. But yeah, it's a different world, man. It's hard to argue that point. One thing, switching gears a little bit, talking to, you know, Sarris from The Athletic here on Ben and Woods. I know you talked about it on your most recent Rates and Barrels. I have not had a chance to listen. We have not even talked about it yet. We've been a little bit under the gun. We had our golf tournament yesterday. We were planning, you know, Pat Hoberg.
Oh yeah, must be terrible.
Yeah. Pat Hoberg, who is widely known around baseball. He's an umpire. He's the guy with the perfect game in the playoffs last year. Didn't miss a call. Has a really good, you know, consistent.
One of the better umpires.
Better umpires. He just got popped by Major League Baseball for gambling. And I feel like, obviously, it should be a bigger story than it is. Can you kind of update us and our audience on that story right now?
I think it's maybe a bombshell in the waiting. The problem right now is that there's an appeal process going on right now where he has been disciplined in some way that we don't even know what the discipline is. They won't tell us what the discipline is until the appeal is heard. And because there's an appeal underway, it's kind of like, I can't talk about an open case deal, you know, where like,
right.
You know, you're just not getting anything out of anybody involved. All we know is that something to do with betting. We don't even know if it was betting on baseball or other sports, but he's appealed it. And the umpires union is a fairly strong union. I mean, they've got some power. And the only statement he released was like, I'm happy that the union is on my side and helping me out on this one. So, you know, we can't see all the way in, but I will say this. I'm pretty sure that the process is that Manfred handed down, the discipline and Manfred is hearing the appeal. So I can't imagine the appeal is going to go that well.
Well, my question, I guess if it goes badly for him and it, you know, turns out he was betting on baseball, he's done. He's done for life. Yeah. I mean, we just saw Tuca Pito Marcano.
But then they're saying things like, you know, it didn't affect the outcome of any games. So
wow.
Maybe he didn't bet on his own games. Like, remember Tim Donaghy?
Yes, but maybe he knows that so-and-so is a crap umpire and he's behind the game.
We all know that.
Right. I mean, it's there's a lot of information that he has that the betting public doesn't have, and I think it should extend to umpires, if it, especially umpires who can literally control the game. What a slippery slope this all is.
It's terrible, and they're, you know, to some extent they made their bet. You know, they are in bed with with the betting money, and now every pre and post game show has parlays. You'll be listening to the middle of a game, and they'll bring up a bet. And so, you know, it is kind of two-faced a little bit, but it is also super important for them to police this and to find everybody and to be on top of it. They're lucky that Tucupita Marcano was bad at betting.
Yes, like horrible, one of the worst ever.
Yeah. But there's a couple things going on. The underlying thing is just like it can be an addiction. And when I read the Marcano story, it read like an addiction. You know, the Jonte Porter story read like an addiction. And there's been a kind of an undercovered aspect. You do hear like that long disclaimer a lot of times, like called whatever, you know, the betting hotline or whatever, if you're addicted or whatever. But the more that this is legal, the more that it's accessible to people that could become addicted. And so that's a kind of an undercovered aspect of it, I think.
Eno Saris is with us from The Athletic. Here's a question that I'm sure you can offer some insight in. We have a number of older veteran pitchers who are either just back or are coming back. Garrett Cole yesterday, Max Scherzer this week. We're seeing Clayton Kershaw throwing. Jacob DeGrom is even throwing now. What are you going to be looking for to determine, you know, how close to the pre-injury levels they're at? How long does it take before you can kind of tell with Stuff Plus what kind of pitchers they're still going to be when they return to the mound?
As little as one start, and not to be facetious, but like maybe as little as five fastballs. I mean, the amount of information you get from just something as simple as fastball velocity in their first start back is kind of staggering, actually. And so if you just want to know, like, much of Musgrove's struggles can be explained by if you look at his fastball velos back to when he came back from the injury after Mexico last year. He's never had the same fastball since. And you could have seen that in one start coming back from Mexico after that injury after Mexico. And so it's a lot of information and pretty good news for Garrett Cole. And
he looked about the same when he comes back.
Yeah.
And, I know, Woods, you saw Clayton Kershaw look like he still had some spin on the curveball.
Bro, he threw a curveball yesterday that I was like, that's
actually,
that's
no, vintage. I'm looking at this. Cole's Stuff Plus is decent, but 94.7 on the fastball yesterday.
A little bit down for him, yeah, certainly.
Yeah, he's been a guy who averaged 98 in 22.
Saris joins us here. Jeremiah Estrada has been a really interesting pickup for the San Diego Padres this year and has scuffled a little bit.
The blizzard of 77. I remember it well, Woods, growing up here in San Diego.
I've never known what that refers to, but I love the song.
See, there was a very cold spell back in 77.
Somewhere.
A blizzard. Somewhere. I'm sure there was. Saris usually joins us from his locale up in NoCal. He's standing by. We'll get to our Smart Baseball segment right after a check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
It's time for the super polished, yet to be named Smart Baseball Weekly segment with Eno Harris. Saris, son of a bitch. Brought to you by 7 Mile Casino, just 7 minutes from the ballpark by the bay in Chula Vista. Here's Eno Saris with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
One of these days, our voice guy is going to get that right the first time.
Yeah, but, exactly.
Not yet, as we welcome Eno.
Screwing up.
Yep. Eno Saris from The Athletic to the program. Eno, hope you're having a good week. Good morning.
Ah, yes. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. Yeah, absolutely.
It is good to have you. I saw your tweets about Willie Mays. I know you're a Bay Area guy. Just give it to us right now, man. Your thoughts on the passing of Willie Mays?
I think he was the best player of all time.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a bias, to the Bay Area. I didn't actually like see him play like physically, but. You know, when you just look at like something like Fangraphs WAR, he's third, and he's behind a guy in Babe Ruth that no fault of his own, didn't play the entire player pool,
yep,
pre-integration baseball, you know? And then he's the other guy he's behind is Barry Bonds, who, you know, has obvious flaws with, you know, just looking at the numbers without context, you know? And then just in terms of how he played on the field, he has like two or three of the most iconic plays in the history of baseball, the catch, you know, he has a play that we call the catch. Everybody knows what it was. Just a complete all around player, super exciting, and had his own sort of interesting way of combating racism, and you know, dealing with all that, while just playing, you know, crazy ass baseball. And if you look and you say, oh, well, why didn't he win more MVPs? I don't know why he didn't win more MVPs. They didn't know about WAR back then, but he led the National League in WAR 10 times. it was a little bit like Mike Trout, where like he didn't win the award every year because people maybe got tired of him or something, but he should have won more MVPs.
You know, one of the great things about baseball is we can go back and compare the numbers from different eras, and you can even apply modern stats, at least most of them, to older ballplayers like WAR. Now, how do you compare eras, though? Because you just pointed out there are certain discrepancies between the talent pool, obviously technology that has gotten better, pitchers who throw harder nowadays. You know, how do you kind of philosophically approach comparing players of different eras?
It's super hard. It's impossible. I mean, I have to do this once a year when I, you know, you do my Hall of Fame vote. And there's so much context that can pop into your head. And you just kind of have to sort through and decide what you feel is important. I mean, it can be super complicated, like stuff like, you know, how much does off-field stuff matter? You know, am I going to count this? Am I going to count that? And then on top of that, you know, you have also these things like we're probably not going to have another 300-game winner as a starting pitcher going forward.
Right.
And we may never, but just because of the way that starting pitchers are used, how many innings they throw. And so if you like have these hard and fast 500 home runs, 300 wins, that's how you get in the Hall of Fame. Then you lose a lot of players and you may never elect another starting pitcher to the Hall of Fame, which seems wrong. So you kind of have to look at trends in each of these, times. You have to think your way back to those times. And you, again, like I think I've said this on this show before, like no number is just a number without context. I mean, there's so much more to it that, you know, even as a numbers guy, I try not to end arguments with numbers. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, the way I look at it in a sport like football, if you took like offensive linemen from the 1960s and put them out there today, they'd look like a JV team. Even Hall of Famers wouldn't.
They'd just get trucked.
Just wouldn't even be able to compete. Now, does that make today's player better than I think you have to kind of ignore some of the effects of, You know, the modern technology and training techniques when you're comparing, because otherwise, I'm sure there's way faster swing speeds now, way faster. Obviously, we know velocity is higher and higher and higher. That doesn't necessarily make you a better ball player. You just were born conveniently later than some other guys.
Well, that's an interesting question. One thing in the Hall of Fame specifically, we are putting fewer people in the Hall of Fame now than we did before. Which seems weird. That seems like maybe an overcorrection. But we just had a player poll on The Athletic, and one of the things that modern players are most annoyed about is ex-players saying that they were better, or that these guys that are, you know, their batting average is down, the strikeouts are up, it's their fault. It's not that the pitching is good now, it's just that the hitters are bad. You know, that was like one of the major complaints of modern players, thinking that we're better now, and in fact I have a piece coming out where I was asking people, you know, I'm a piece coming out tomorrow with Jason Stark about the run environment, and we were asking people, and hitters today think that pitching has never been better.
It's hard to disagree with that. When you watch, you know, 22 inches of run on a two-seamer from Michael King or Matt Waldron's knuckleball or whatever, you know, Robert Suarez's fastball. I mean, it's hard to...
It's like you used to have knuckleballers.
Sure.
We have a knuckleballer who has five other pitches.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, you knew you were just going to go up there and swing at three knuckleballs maybe, and maybe one would hang and you would hit it. But, yeah, it's a different world, man. It's hard to argue that point. One thing, switching gears a little bit, talking to, you know, Saris from The Athletic here on Ben and Woods, I know you talked about it on your most recent Rates and Barrels. I have not had a chance to listen. We have not even talked about it yet. We've been a little bit under the gun. Had our golf tournament yesterday. We were planning, you know. Pat Hoberg.
Oh, yeah. Must be terrible.
Yeah. Pat Hoberg, who is widely known around baseball. He's an umpire. He's the guy with the perfect game in the playoffs last year. Didn't miss a call. Has a really good, you know, consistent.
One of the better
umpires. He just got popped by Major League Baseball for gambling. And I feel like, obviously, it should be a bigger story than it is. Can you kind of update us and our audience on that story right now?
I think it's maybe a bombshell in the waiting. The problem right now is that there's an appeal process going on right now where he has been disciplined in some way that we don't even know what the discipline is. They won't tell us what the discipline is until the appeal is heard. And because there's an appeal underway, it's kind of like I can't talk about an open case deal, you know, where like,
right.
you know, you're just not getting anything out of anybody involved. All we know is that he something to do with betting. We don't even know if it was betting on baseball or other sports, but he's appealed it. And the umpires union is a fairly strong union. I mean,
they've got some
power. And the only statement he released was like, "I'm happy that the union is on my side and helping me out on this one." So, you know, we can't see all the way in. But I will say this, I'm pretty sure that the process is that Manfred handed down the discipline and Manfred is hearing the appeal. So I can't imagine the appeal is going to go that well.
Well, so my question, I guess if it goes badly for him and it, you know, turns out he was betting on baseball, he's done. He's done for life. Yeah, I mean, we just saw Tucapito Marcano.
Yeah, but then they're saying things like, you know, it didn't affect the outcome of any games. So
wow.
Maybe he didn't bet on his own games, like, remember Tim Donaghy?
Yes, but maybe he knows that so-and-so is a crap umpire and he's behind the game.
We all know that.
Right. I mean, it's there's a lot of information that he has that the betting public doesn't have, and I think it should extend to umpires, especially umpires who can literally control the game. What a slippery slope this all is!
It's terrible, and they're you know, to some extent they made their bet. You know, they are in bed with the betting money, and now every pre and post game show has parlays. You'll be listening to the middle of a game, and they'll bring up a bet. And so, you know, it is kind of two-faced a little bit, but it is also super important for them to police this and to find everybody and to be on top of it. They're lucky that Tucapito Marcano was bad at betting.
Yes, like horrible, one of the worst ever.
Yeah. But there's a couple things going on. The underlying thing is just like it can be an addiction. And when I read the Marcano story, it read like an addiction. You know, the Jonte Porter story read like an addiction, and there's been a kind of an undercovered aspect. You do hear like that long disclaimer a lot of times, like called whatever, you know, the betting hotline or whatever if you're addicted or whatever. But the more that this is legal, the more that it's accessible to people that could become addicted. And so that's a kind of an undercovered aspect of it, I think.
Eno Saris is with us from The Athletic. Here's a question that I'm sure you can offer some insight in. We have a number of older veteran pitchers who are either just back or are coming back. Garrett Cole yesterday, Max Scherzer this week. We're seeing Clayton Kershaw throwing. Jacob DeGrom is even throwing now. What are you going to be looking for to determine, you know, how close to the pre-injury levels they're at? How long does it take before you can kind of tell with stuff plus what kind of pitchers they're still going to be when they return to the mound?
As little as one start. And not to be facetious, but like maybe as little as five fastballs. I mean, the amount of information you get from just something as simple as fastball velocity in their first start back is kind of staggering, actually. And so if you just want to know, like, much of Musgrove's struggles can be explained by if you look at his fastball velos back to when he came back from the injury after Mexico last year. He's never had the same fastball since. And you could have seen that in one start coming back from Mexico after that injury after Mexico. And so it's a lot of information and pretty good news for Gerrit Cole. And
he looked about the same then.
Yeah.
I know Woods, you saw Clayton Kershaw looked like he still had some spin on the curveball.
Bro, he threw a curveball yesterday that I was like,
I'm looking at this. Cole stuff plus is decent, but 94.7 on the fastball yesterday.
A little bit down for him, yeah, certainly.
Yeah, he's been a guy who averaged 98 in 22.
Saris joins us here. Jeremiah Estrada has been a really interesting pickup for the San Diego Padres this year and has scuffled a little bit as of late. Have you been following along with this young man and his stuff and what, you know, his chitter that he throws? Of course, everyone has a name for their pitch now. The chitter, you have to be very careful when you say it on the radio, but that's what he calls it, again, the chitter. But he's been, for him, you know, he's given up some long balls. What are you seeing for him? Do you think it potentially could be overuse for him, or is it just kind of a little downstretch?
He was an amazing waiver wire pickup that I loved the minute it happened. I still can't believe that the Cubs let him go. He would be the Cubs closer right now.
He would, yeah, 100%.
If he was there. And I just think that, you know, the thing that they were probably focused on is that he doesn't have great command. And his velo was down a little bit in 2023 with the Cubs. Having not great command and the velo down, like, that must be how they made their decision. But I still, Stuff Plus still loved him in that condition. And so what you're seeing this year is the new pitch is a big deal, but also just the ups and downs, I think, are just related to command. Command can manifest itself in walks or sometimes meatballs.
Yeah.
You know, if you sometimes you just let it groove down the middle of the plate when you're trying to be more fine with it. So, I think this is just the kind of lumps that you'll get with a guy that is, you know, incredible stuff and not so incredible command.
Eno, we thank you very much. And as always, a reminder that our entire conversation with Eno, including the part about gambling, has been brought to you by 7 Mile Casino. Just minutes from now.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. GEGE 000466.
Thank you, Eno, as always. Yeah. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys.
Some of those guys, though, whether they come back, you know, as themselves or not, will probably determine a great deal of how the rest of this season goes. Look at the Rangers. They have not had a good defense of their title start to the season, but if Scherzer and DeGrom come back at all, like, you know, previous versions of them, they're a completely different team.
Yeah.
The Dodgers do need Clayton Kershaw. We thought they'd be so deep it wouldn't matter, but
no,
Walker Buehler just went back on the injured list again. They haven't had the quite of the pitching depth that they thought they would, and they really could use Clayton Kershaw to come back and be something like Clayton Kershaw the last couple of months of the season if he does get back.
Yeah, I saw some clip of him breaking off an Uncle Charlie that was just vintage Kershaw. I mean, for some minor league kid down there, seeing that too was probably
and to a lesser extent, if Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove can at some point come back and pitch like they pitch, it's a different San Diego Padres rotation than it is right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of questions that still are going to be answered by some of these bigger names you know, on the mound, starting pitchers as the season goes on.
Yeah, no question. And yeah, the Rangers have not, they've not had a good, and again, I'm not surprised, man. You make a run to the World Series, there's some fall off, certainly, but, you know, they're getting those guys back will be huge. DeGrom's been throwing, Scherzer could come back and is coming back, you know.
Saturday, I think. Yeah,
potentially could help turn their season around as well. They got theirs, though, so. Sure, they're happy.
All right, we've reached the final hour of the program. Coming up momentarily, Paulie's going to give us some headlines in the Rindle Report. I do want to talk more about Manny Machado. We touched on it briefly, yeah. But the comments that he made both to Kevin Acey and AJ Casavell, two different pieces, but definitely a more vulnerable Manny Machado
potentially,
than we've maybe seen in the past. A little bit of that. You know, nothing bothers me facade breaking down a little bit with the frustrations that he's going through this season. I thought very humanizing, but, you know, everyone's got their own opinions, especially when it comes to Manny Machado. So talk about that in our final hour, all coming up next. It's more Ben and Woods on the way on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.